This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show. The Baseball Reporter with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Jordan's Furniture, Aruba Tourism Authority, NY World Class Market, the New England Regional Council of Carpenters, Hammer and Aruba All Inclusive Resort, Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC and Electric, JetBlue, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Advanced Auto Parts, Brennan Smoke Shop, U.S. Marker Board, Boston Volkswagen, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers, Foxwoods Resort Casino, Jackson Lumber, and Mass General Cancer Center. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, welcome into the Baseball Reporters. Jim Murray and Matt McCarthy in for Maz for, I believe, the final time this summer. It better be.
Thanks. Tell the people how you really feel, Jim.
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, I think the people barely care about their Boston Red Sox at this point, and rightfully so. But then again, I don't know. Maybe they're back, McCarthy. Maybe they're back. As we head into tonight's game, the first of three against the Angels. This is it, the last lamb for a while. The Red Sox were off last night. Again, they begin this three-game series with the Angels tonight in Anaheim. You want to call them the LA Angels, fine, whatever. You get Nathan Eovaldi tonight, bullpen game tomorrow, and then the return of David Price, he of the cyst. Yes, the cyst that's on his wrist on Sunday. As an aside, by the way, it being cut down day in the NFL tomorrow, if anything happens with the Patriots and a cut, especially if it's a surprise cut, we'll break in. We'll tell you about it. That's all, though. We'll tell you about it. Baseball only here. The big book of sports radio bylaws insists we only just give you the news if it breaks. Opinion? No, that will have to wait for 7 o'clock when Joe Murray is in for Adam Jones. But yes, last time the Red Sox will see a garbage opponent for a while, Matt McCarthy. They are 7-3 in their last 10. They took two straight against the lowly Colorado Rockies. Oh, boy. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I watched those games in their entirety, but just watching the highlights, that's a team that's given up. Holy crap. They're 5.5 back of the wild card race. They're closing the gap on Cleveland and Tampa. It all feels like it all is going well right now at the best possible time for the Red Sox with a month to go, right? Right? Huh? No. No. See, again, this is being a little bit facetious and cheeky here. That's why I say it's the last lamb for a while, because coming up next on the homestand when the Red Sox return home would be the Minnesota Twins and the New York Yankees. In fact, when you look at September, I've purposely done a little bit of a deep dive on this, McCarthy, because I've been dug in for, for the entirety of the season in not believing in this Red Sox team.
I think second week of April was when you declared the season done?
Pretty much, yes. Yeah, no, they showed up fat, happy, still riding high from last year and the 108 wins and the great postseason run, and it was. But I'm starting to lean towards feeling like that was the anomaly of the last 4 or 5 years here with this team, this underachieving Red Sox team who got John Farrell fired. And I was no Farrell guy, especially towards the end, but ultimately I'm starting to feel like it was more about them than it was him, because they're doing the same damn thing to Alex Cora. You give them a lot of rope, they're going to take advantage. So, fine. You want to feel good about them? Fine. You feel how you want to feel. But if you just look at how September looks for them from the 3rd to the 23rd, they will be playing 19 games against winning teams. 19. That also includes the San Francisco Giants, who will be playing at Fenway, and I'm sure a lot of you will be coming out, especially those of you that are old and you want to get into the whole Yaz thing. His grandson, Mike Yastrzemski, who's been one of the better stories in Major League Baseball in the second half, he's coming to town. They're going to get smoked. They're going to get... Enjoy this. Enjoy this little run, because the reckoning's coming next week. The reckoning is coming in September. Don't be fooled by this. That 19 game stretch, Matt, they'll go what, 7-12, yeah. 8-11 at best, well, 6-13.
Right, because you're going to get to the point where you're going to be, I don't know, let's just say 7.5 out with however many games to play, and you just kind of throw up your hands and say, well, you know, it's the middle of September, we're cooked, you know, our elimination number is 5 or whatever, so see you later. Yeah, no, this is not going to trend well when the Red Sox return home, where they've been as bad of a Red Sox team at home as I can remember in a long time. I don't have the stats in front of me. They had a losing record at home for much of the season, which is, I mean, frankly, shocking, because we know with Fenway Park, you can build your team to play at Fenway Park, and the Red Sox always play well at home historically. Like, that is a trend that goes back, decades, essentially. Yeah, no, this is not going to go well for them. Once these good teams come in here, it's not going
to
go well.
And you have some numbers also to back up, not just looking at, you know, I just was getting in terms of the opponents that they're going to be playing in September. You had some numbers you sent in the Felger and Maz email chain this morning about how, you know, okay, it's all looked good here over the last 10 games, and you've had guys funny timing in terms of, you know, the contract push for guys like Rick Porcello and JD Martinez, how they've been playing as of late. They've gained no ground. Even though they've been on this little bit of a hot streak here, they had the heater in Colorado, they really haven't gained all that much ground. And okay, they've closed the gap between Tampa and Cleveland, but in terms of what they really could have done, ain't much.
No, and that's the thing. I keep hearing people talking about, well, the Red Sox are playing good baseball and they're starting to close the gap and everything. They're not. Maybe they're playing good baseball. I mean, sure, they are right now. Since the 8-game losing streak, which essentially killed the season, Jim, the Red Sox have played 700 baseball. It's very good. They're 14-6. Sure, it's a small sample size. That's still 700 baseball. You play 700 baseball for a long stretch of time, you're obviously making the playoffs. Do you know, since the end of the 8-game losing streak, do you know how many games the Red Sox have picked up in the wild card standings? Why don't you take a guess?
It's like one, right?
Yeah, Billy, you want to take a guess? Get that? You can give me a
zero.
Thumbs up. Zero. They've gained one game. They've gained one game, despite the fact that they've been playing extremely well since the end of that 8-game losing streak. They're playing 700 baseball, and they've gained one game. With a month to play and two teams to jump, you're still 5.5 out. And people say, oh, 5.5 out, that's not really a big deal. You have to get past two teams. All right, so you're playing well, but the Rays and the A's are still playing well enough to keep you pretty damn far away from them. 5.5 games with a month to play, it's not insurmountable, but it's damn hard when you have two teams you have to jump, and you had to play 700 baseball to essentially keep pace with them. Those teams show no signs of collapsing. You need to play damn good baseball, and they both need to collapse. Not one team, they both need to collapse. That's a real issue for this team.
Yeah, look, if you listen with any regularity to me on Filigree Maz or on Saturdays with Chris Casper, or you follow me on Twitter, it's quite obvious. I'm not the most optimistic fellow on the planet.
Not really.
It's over. It's been over, right? And like, I'm not feeling better because of the way that this team has played in the last 3 weeks, and then they've looked better, and some of these other teams are falling. Okay, you want to feel good because the A's and Yankees are playing this weekend, and maybe you can make up some ground there. They've run out of time. Time is not on their side. We're not talking about early June here. They have a month. They're playing some really good competition after a lamb. And I've referred to the Angels as a lamb. By the way, you split with them last time you saw them in a 4-game series. So you want to make a case for them? Fine. You want to try to convince McCarthy or I? 617-779-0985. Because I'm so pessimistic, I've frankly been a little bit annoyed from some of the stuff I've seen on Twitter, some of the calls I have heard when we have talked Red Sox earlier in the week. Like, oh, no, things have kind of turned around. And it hasn't. It hasn't. Don't be fooled by this. Don't be a sucker. If you are one, please make your case. I'd love to hear it. I'll probably laugh at you. Just fair warning there. I'm sure McCarthy will do the same. It's just
ultimately,
Matt, it's too late. It's too late.
So the Red Sox, you know, they keep talking about that series against the Rays, and looking ahead to the September schedule, they play the Rays third week of September, the 20th through the 22nd. They keep talking about, oh, we want to get close enough to make that a series. We want to make that a series where it can really mean a lot. Let's say you go into that series two behind the Rays. Well, what are the A's doing? Let's say you sweep the Rays and you move past them. Well, what are the A's doing at that point? What if you're only keeping pace with the A's and the Rays fall off? And, you know, so it doesn't matter where you are in relevance to the Rays, because the Rays could play bad baseball in the month of September. You could be, you know, one game behind them, but you could still be five back of Oakland. Again, they've played 700 baseball. They're still 5.5 back. What, do you want them to play 800 baseball, 900 baseball? How many games do you have to win to even make it interesting?
Yeah, they would have to be on a pace that they haven't been able to be on at any point during this season. And as you know, as anyone I would imagine listening to the show at this point on the getaway day before a long weekend, and if you are, believe me, we appreciate it.
God bless you.
That kind of a pace, they haven't done it all season. And you know it's about bigger picture in baseball. So the bigger picture, look at it. Like, they haven't been able to do it. So if you want to make a case for why you now believe and they're going to turn things around, they are going to squeak into the playoffs, love to hear it. It's 617-779-0985. Lord knows I could use the laugh. Something else popped up that we wanted to bring up, too. You had mentioned that there's a Ken Rosenthal piece that you had... It was read or heard on Mookie Betts, because I've been kind of dug in for a while, feeling like Mookie Betts, this is it. This is his last season in a Red Sox uniform. He's going to be traded this offseason. They're going to have to trade him because of, in terms of, the money, how they're going to have to replenish their farm system, how they're going to have to bring in younger pitchers. But that might not ultimately not be the case.
So, and maybe we can get Billy to get this audio for on the other side of the break so we don't spring it on here, Billy, because I don't want to 100% put words in Rosenthal's mouth. But Rosenthal said on Fox Sports yesterday, it's about a minute-long clip, where he was talking about the trade market for Mookie Betts. And Jeff Passan wrote a whole article this week kind of previewing the offseason. And, you know, there's, of course, a sense around baseball that the Red Sox are going to be shopping Betts because they don't, you know if he's going to be here. We don't know if the Red Sox want to pay him $350 million. Rosenthal just kind of suggested that the return for Betts might not be what you would think it would be for one of the top five players in baseball, right? Because, well, he's going to be a free agent. So you're already dealing with only a few teams, Jim, you know, that would be interested in a guy like Mookie Betts, like the Atlanta Braves or the Dodgers or maybe even the White Sox. You're not dealing with all of baseball. It's a very specific set and list of teams. So that's one thing. But also, Betts' contract for next year, if one of those teams viewed him as more of a rental, they're going to have to pay him $25 to $30 million because of arbitration. That's a significant chunk of change for a team that, again, might only look at him for 1 year and say, you know what, we feel like we can win a World Series. We're going to go out and we're going to add Mookie Betts. We've got a loaded farm system, but we're just going to look at this as a 1 year thing. If you're paying a guy $30 million, it's hard to look at him as a 1 year type of rental. So, you know, maybe we can get the Rosenthal audio a little bit later on, but he kind of said the return might not be as good as you think.
And ultimately, it sounds like the market might not actually be as big as one might think for Mookie Betts because they will be able to sign him. So we're really going to play you that audio from Ken Rosenthal on the other side. And really, anything you'd like to talk about with your Red Sox, have at it at 617-779-0985. As I sit here and look up the sky and shake my fist at it and say, damn you, Maz, for being off today. This will be, I think, the last time, McCarthy, that I have to host this show until next summer. That's what happens here. So
but who's paying attention to that? Oh, you are. Yeah, that's right.
So that
made that very clear.
I guess we'll get into some trade talk and free agent signing. Really, that's all that's left at this point in the season, I think, to talk about when it pertains to the Red Sox. So we'll get to that coming up here. Baseball reporters here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. 98.5. This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Maserati, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Red Sox will have no choice but to listen to trade offers from Mookie Betts if they cannot sign him long term. But would they actually move him? At least one rival GM is skeptical simply because the acquisition costs would be exorbitant. Premium talent, plus taking on the final year of Betts in arbitration and paying him a salary that figures to be in the $25 million to $28 million range. Now, the Diamondbacks traded Paul Goldschmidt entering his free agent year last offseason. The Pirates did the same with Andrew McCutchen 2 years ago. The returns have turned out okay. The D-backs acquired Luke Weaver and Carson Kelly in a four-player package. The Pirates received Brian Reynolds and Kyle Crick. But the salaries of Goldschmidt and McCutchen both were below $15 million, and the Pirates kicked in $2.5 million to help cover McCutchen's money. In addition, the Cardinals surely sensed that they would have a chance to keep Goldschmidt. Teams, on the other hand, already know that the Red Sox have tried and failed to sign Betts.
So again, that's Ken Rosenthal. Now of what, The Athletic?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
all of these guys move around so much. You have any idea that Gammon's writing for The Athletic?
I had no idea.
Everybody writes for The Athletic, I guess. Make me guess. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, I had no idea that he was working for them until he had that little thing a little while ago, which was basically him doing the bidding of the Red Sox. An unnamed Red Sox official saying, oh, well, you know, if we have to trade Mookie Betts, don't look at us. Our hands are tied. We went to him before. Like, okay, we get what's going on there. But Rosenthal there talking about what McCarthy had mentioned in the first segment of the Baseball Reporters tonight, Jim Murray and Matt McCarthy in for Tony Maz, saying that maybe they might not end up moving on for Mookie Betts this offseason, which I feel like is just at this point going to be a formality, just like the impending firing of Dave Dombrowski. But as you had mentioned, you know, when you were referencing that cut, it just feels like they won't have a lot to deal with in terms of some of the teams in Major League Baseball, like maybe the Angels, maybe the Braves, and that might be it.
Dodgers, you would think. I mean, again,
That's what I meant, the Dodgers, not
well,
the Angels.
Well, I mean, the Angels.
LA, the other stupid L.A. team on my mind.
Yeah, I mean, the Angels could be a, you know, landing spot. They have a top prospect, an outfield prospect, is one of the best in the game right now. You're dealing with a very limited number of teams. And, you know, I think Rosenthal astutely points out, Okay, well, the returns for Goldschmidt and McCutchen have been okay, but not great. I mean, they haven't been like, wow, look at the haul that the Diamondbacks got. I mean, there were a lot of people in the game who felt like the Diamondbacks got a decent return for Paul Goldschmidt. But this is a franchise-altering decision. If you're going to trade Mookie Betts, theoretically, you know, we've kind of all assumed that they're going to get this coup.
Giant
this,
haul,
you
know, yeah.
Exactly, this coup in return. And you're
well, you've
get,
said it's going to be a franchise-altering type of deal, right?
Of course. Like, of course, and you need to get pitching prospects in return and all of that. So the question is, if you can't get a great return, do you then hold on to him? And then do you then just say, well, you know, it's better than getting, you know, middling guys, and let's just hold on to him for a year, make another run at a World Series, and take the compensation pick when he leaves. But this also makes me look back at this past summer. And if you had dealt him at the deadline, you would have dealt him to a team knowing that they're getting a year and a half out of Mookie Betts, two World Series runs. You've already paid $10 million of his $20 million contract this year. Maybe that's the time you could have gotten, you know, three top prospects from the Atlanta Braves just to, you know, throw a team out there. Did the Red Sox screw this up? Did they screw it up by not trading him at this past deadline for the hopes that they could make a run at it this year when they had been a seventh-place team for 3 months and have been a seventh-place team all year? I think that's a fair second guess.
Have you been annoyed? Because, I mean, look, you've continued to do your hardcore baseball podcast. Again, check it out, 98.5sportshub.com. You've been annoyed at what feels like a contract push from guys like Porcello and Martinez?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, particularly Porcello. I mean, I think Martinez had been good this year and just got locked in, but Porcello had been awful. And, you know, early on in the year, I felt like the whole contract thing was lingering over his head, and that was affecting him. And, I mean, now he's been so much better. It is frustrating, I mean, totally. But, you know, Martinez, is he going to opt out? This is a fascinating case to me, Jim, because he's a designated hitter. He's probably not going to play the field. That, again, limits his options as far as where he can go. Can he get $62 million on the open market? Maybe, maybe not. This is certainly helping his case, though, because a month ago I would have said, yeah, he's not opting out. Kind of a disappointing year. He's had the back problem all year long. He's probably only got two or three teams legitimately where he could land. Now, though, with this run, maybe he does. And yeah, that's a little annoying.
Yeah, and I think you may want to rethink your stance on J.D. Martinez being, as you just said, dialed in, Matt, because I'm glad you mentioned this because I wanted to bring this because I find this annoying that these two guys, I mean, this, you find this in sports all the time. And look, you know, get that money. I'm a capitalist. I understand
right.
It. Like, you know, it, good for you. Go get it. I'm for the players over the owners more than anything else. But in baseball, it's an inherently selfish sport. And when a team has had a bad season or an underachieving season like the Red Sox have had this year, I get a little annoyed when you see guys pop when they're in a contract push at this time of year. He did the same thing when he ended up going from the Tigers to Arizona.
He did. He got really hot.
Final 62 games after being traded from the Detroit Tigers to the Arizona Diamondbacks, hit .302, had an OPS of .1107, 29 home runs, 65 RBI. Since the end of the 8-game losing streak, .394, OPS over 1,000, 1-2-1-2, 7 home runs, 20 RBI. Like, he knows what he's doing here. Like, this is a guy that I think is ultimately going to try to opt out at the end of the year.
Isn't he kind of the epitome of everything that's gone on with the Red Sox
yes.
this year? It's like, okay, now you want to start turning it on? Okay, all right. You want to start playing better baseball? You want to beat up on the teams that you should? That's fine. Where was this all season long? No, it's a legitimate frustration. It is. I would just say this, Jim. I mean, Martinez really wasn't the problem with the Red Sox this year. He was great last year. He was good this year. I don't know if you can always expect players to have great seasons every year, even if they're one of the better hitters in baseball, and J.D. Martinez has certainly been that. I would just say that his season last year makes me think that he's not entirely just a guy who dials in when he's chasing contracts. He wasn't chasing a contract last year. He had gotten his money. He had one of the best seasons of his career. He's one of the most impactful free agent signings in the history of the Red Sox. Is this run a little frustrating given that it's a too little too late type of thing? Yeah, it is. But I don't know. Last year makes me think that this guy's pretty good, contract year or not.
All right, I got to trust my instincts here because I've been at this radio thing for like 22 years, not to blow smoke up my own keister. Yep. But like, I get the look at this point, like, you know, you guys don't care. We're doing this because we're contractually obligated to talk about them until the regular season's over. There's not much to talk about with the Red Sox. There hasn't been for a while. It's been an underachieving, dead-ass team for a while. I don't think they're making the playoffs. Don't be fooled by that. So with that, I feel like for me, there's like only one real interesting thing in regard to this team and baseball as a whole right now, and that's this news that the LA Times reported today. Mm-hmm. But the toxicology report that states that Tyler Skaggs, see, this is how it all connects because they're playing the Angels. He was on the Angels. Tyler Skaggs, the pitcher who passed away earlier this summer, had fentanyl and oxycodone as well as alcohol in his system on the day that he died. And we were talking about this off the air during the afternoon show, Matt. I was under the impression this was probably going to end up being a suicide based on, you know, how this thing was first reported. But you had read that was snuffed out almost immediately.
I think they said almost immediately that it was not a suicide. I remember thinking, I mean, because listen, anytime you hear of a, what was he, 27 years old, you're like, wow, these things don't happen. I mean, listen, I eat unhealthy. I live an extraordinarily unhealthy lifestyle, Jim. So when I drop dead in 20 years, you know, don't be surprised. Be like, yeah, he had it coming to him the way he was eating. Yes. If I drop dead now, you'd be surprised.
Arteries were getting harder by the day.
Yeah, pretty much. Right. So when I'm dead at the age of 45, you'll be like, yeah, he kind of brought it upon himself. You don't expect something like this to happen. So as you said, you think, oh, is it that type of situation? But I think I'm fairly certain. I remember reading this or very early on. They said that's not the case with this.
Well, and so I find it's obviously a horrible and terrible story. But you know, I find it interesting in regard to the, you know, the continued scourge in this country when it comes to opioids. So his family puts out a statement via the LA Times as well.
And real quick, you went over the toxicology report, right?
No. Results. So looking at this, test showed 38 nanograms per millimeter of the prescription strength painkiller oxycodone, use of which prohibited by MLB's Joint Drug and Prevention Program. Blood alcohol level of 0.122.
He had fentanyl, oxycodone, and alcohol in his system.
Yeah,
That's what the toxicology.
Well, right. Part I had said. Okay. I thought you were looking for the numbers.
No. Jim, it's the end of the week. Excuse me. Do your thing.
Well, this is the thing. So the family. This is the most pressing issue, and what I find interesting about this, the family believes the death may involve an employee of the LA Angels. So what is this, you know, did he get slipped something? Was it a mistake? Like, I'm so tired of hearing about this fentanyl thing. Like,
awful.
And talk to a cop about this. Like, you know, like the size of a grain of salt. Like, if they touch it, that gets in your, like, it can complete, you can OD. Like, you know, first responders on this that are treating someone that might have OD'd or someone that might have this on them. Like, you touch it, it gets into your system, you can OD.
It's scary stuff. I mean, you know, if you're a first responder, Jim, and I know you have a lot of, you know, friends in law enforcement, if you're responding to a scene, you don't know what you're getting yourself into. You don't know what type of danger you're putting yourself into because this thing, it is truly the worst of the worst.
But let me tell you, like, I'm just, like, I get it. Like, yeah, you know, you want, here it is, Labor Day weekend. A lot of you are going to be getting after it over this weekend. I plan on spending most of tomorrow polluted on a boat on Lake Winnipesaukee. So I get it. We're all dealing with a lot of stress in our lives. It's the dumbest time to be alive as a human being. And it gets increasingly so by the day. The rainforests are burning down. The glaciers are melting. Every idiot's got a gun, seemingly. So you all want to get loose. I understand that. So far be it from me to say, like, how, you know, you should lead your lives. But the fentanyl thing, like, I've had enough. I'm tired of hearing about it. It's been the cause of how many deaths? Every time you look up, not just family members, like how many famous musicians, Tom Petty, Prince, Mac Miller, Demi Lovato almost got off by it. Like, I'm so, like, and to hear this about this guy, Tyler Skaggs, like, I'm obviously no Angels fan. I don't know anything about him. It sucks that someone that age died. But it seems to me, just reading on this, if I had to guess, that the family's now looking at a member of the Angels organization, he probably got, like, you know, a Percocet or something off the street. It had a grain of fentanyl in it, and it ended up killing the poor SOB, and he chokes on his own vomit and dies because he mixed it with booze or just had it in his system because the stuff's so terrifying. Like, I don't know. Like, it freaks me out because
it's scary crap, man.
Yeah, like, and if you know, there's a good chance for anything that you're going to put in you is cut with that crap now. It's awful. And if you're taking it knowingly, like, what the hell are you doing? So it feels like this story will get bigger. The family rightfully will look into this. They've hired high priced lawyers to look into this and look.
They hired Clemens' lawyer, Rusty Harden.
Yeah, the Angels organization to try to weed out who gave this to them. But I don't know. If I had to guess, it was probably just a stupid mistake. And how many ODs and deaths have you had from this because of this horrible, horrible drug? And this is, it seems like another case of this. And it just feels like the other thing too, like professional sports. And I think this is maybe what you've seen. If I had to guess with what's going on with the early retirements of Rob Gronkowski and Andrew Luck in the NFL, I'm sure that, you know, the head trauma and the beating that those guys have put themselves through has led to, you know, depression and whatnot. But the NFL, like most professional sports, are pumping opioids into some of these guys so they can deal with their pain. Major League Baseball is probably no different. And I wouldn't be shocked if Major League Baseball, like other sports, for years have turned a blind eye to opioid use. And so when these guys can't maybe get it from the teams, well, then they get it from a member of the team who goes out in the street and buys off a dealer at the corner. And the next thing you know, you drop dead because it's got fentanyl in it. Like, it's just the cycle of this is it really is frightening.
Well, it's scary, and we know that this is going to become a bigger story because, you know, the family is not going to come out and say in a statement, you know, essentially what they said. And I've got the statement right here. We were shocked to learn that the situation may have involved an employee of the Los Angeles Angels. So we all know that this is going to get bigger. Was this, you know, just a buddy of his, you know, who worked for the team, like a club? Was it, you know, the medical staff? I mean, who knows? Who knows this whole situation? We're certainly going to learn a lot more of it, though, and it's going to give us a little bit of insight to this. And the insight might be scary. I mean, it might be some heavy stuff here, Jim.
And it's just maybe, you know, some poor bastard, some low-level employee just trying to help a player like Tyler Skaggs get these drugs because, you know, especially a guy maybe coming off surgery, and I don't know if that had happened with Skaggs, but just someone that just wants to let loose, stressed out, the grind of 162 games. He was on the road, right? So he has a guy go out and get it for him. And I don't know. I feel like a lot of these teams, a lot of these organizations throughout professional sports definitely just turn a blind eye to it because they want these guys to get through the grind, especially in baseball, you know, in the season that goes for what feels like a whole year. All right. I had to just mention that because that was the one thing that truly interested me. And if I'm going to fill in for Maz, damn it, I'm going to talk about what I want. See, you got to trust your instincts in this business there.
I like it.
Listen to the old man every once in a while. Okay. We're behind here. There were some big trades there were some trades for the Patriots today as they continue to reshuffle their roster ahead of cutdown day. Matt McCarthy's going to get you caught up there in the Sports Hub headlines, and then back after this here in the Baseball Reporters, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Fresh paint.
We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Mazzarotta, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
-617-779-0985, the phone number if you want to join the Baseball Reporters. It's Jim Murray and Matt McCarthy in for Maz tonight. Red Sox start up this three-game series against the Angels as you have Nathan Eovaldi on the mound this evening. I don't know how many of you will actually be watching. But if you are and you want to talk about your team, hey, have at it between now and when we wrap up at 7 o'clock and hand over to Joe Murray. We have covered, what the upcoming schedule looks like for the Red Sox in September. And one of the reasons, well, maybe the main reason for me as to why I'm not taking this seriously and how this team has played as of late and why I'm not buying the 7-3 in their last 10. And, ooh, you cleaned up on the lowly Rockies who've given up. This is it. After this, you're going to face some real iron. And the reckoning is coming for the Red Sox. And, you know, the reset is going to happen. And they're not making the playoffs. Don't fool yourself.
They don't have the pitching. Again, you're going bullpen tomorrow night. But
they're getting David Price back on Sunday, McCarthy.
Yeah, that's awesome. Congratulations. Like, Nathan Eovaldi hasn't been himself this year. They don't have the pitching. Starting pitching, bullpen. Ultimately, that's what it comes down to. If they had the pitching, they'd be in the playoffs this year, Jim. They don't. It's just a fact.
Well, a recommendation to you, the baseball fan, if you've stopped watching the Red Sox, and at this point I wouldn't blame you.
The baseball fan, meaning there's one out there.
Yeah.
It's kind of where the sport's trending, unfortunately.
As much as I've been down on not just the Red Sox this year, but the sport as a whole, you know what I tell you? Like, I will always watch a baseball movie, Matt. And one I watched, figures I should have just waited because now it's free on Netflix. Or if you have a Netflix account or you have someone's account that you're using like I have for the last 7 years. It's called Screwball.
I've heard this is excellent. I haven't seen it.
It's tremendous. So it's done by Billy Corbin, who he made all these other documentaries, like mostly are Florida-based. So he made Cocaine Cowboys, which is about the rise of the cocaine trade in the late 70s and early 80s in Miami and in South Florida. He did The U on 30 for 30, which is all about The U.
Yeah.
It's all about with Uncle Luke and all that. Like, it's great. He does great, great documentaries. So Screwball is about the Biogenesis scandal, and that was based in South Florida.
Yeah.
Like, all of his works are they're very Florida-based, and this one is great, and it really shows you some of the ins and outs of just how shady not just Alex Rodriguez was in the Biogenesis scandal, but Major League Baseball as a whole, too. Like, if you don't really know that case or don't remember it well, I can't recommend this thing enough. And as a Red Sox fan, there's great tidbits in this movie about Manny Ramirez. I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again just because I'm trying to kill time here. But Manny Ramirez was one of the great, obviously, you know, one of the great hitters in Red Sox history, but also one of the great whack jobs. I used to play in this card game, a weekly card game, and one of the members of this card game was also a Red Sox clubhouse attendant. And he told this story once that, like, having to basically clean up after Manny Ramirez was a job in and of itself. And Manny used to, in lieu of using toilet paper, used to use hand towels instead and then try to flush those hand towels.
Oh my
so
God.
Part of this poor bastard's job was to get the hand towels out of the clogged toilets at old-ass Fenway Park. So
what a gig.
Oh, right? Like, imagine the gloves you'd have to put on up to your elbow to get those things out and what they looked like after being used by the man. Like, God. So
should have watched the Jim Murray off-air show with the bidet, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. No,
life-changing experience.
It's a life-changing experience. Used a bidet for the first time in my life at a B&B in Martha's Vineyard over the weekend. Can't recommend enough. I'll never go back. A bidet will change your life. But that being said, I bring up how wacky Manny is because there's some stories that are told about Manny Ramirez in Screwball, this documentary, that are tremendous. Like, I don't want to even ruin it for you. Like, you should check this out. You know, like baseball movies, I'm always into. And if it has, you know, really good content like this one does, I'm always going to be in.
Top three baseball movies.
Oh, the Mount Rushmore. I always tell myself I'll never do this, but
no, you should
know,
do it.
Yeah.
Screw it, Jim.
I mean, I would put this on it. Like, I'm into documentaries more than anything else. But I would go Major League, the first one, obviously. This and number two, and then number three. 8 Men Out. I'm still a sucker for 8 Men Out. How can you not be?
I've never seen 8 Men Out, believe it or not.
Oh, no, that's not what I'm thinking of. What's the Field of Dreams. That's what I meant.
So Field of Dreams, I mean, it's a baseball movie, but it kind of, I've always said it kind of isn't.
It's a story about, like, dads and their kid, you know, like, or a kid, or their love for a dad.
Which is why the Field of Dreams game that they're doing in Iowa is going to be so awesome. And I will kill to take my dad to that game. I'm going to do whatever I can, possibly next summer, to take my dad to that Field of Dreams game. Maybe I'm a sucker for MLB marketing. Oh, but I'm a sucker on this one. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm just going to try to make money on that. What I'm going to try to do is get those tickets and then sell them to a sucker like you is what I'm going to do, McCarthy. Like, I know. It's that gif of, take my money from, not The Simpsons, but the other cartoon.
Futurama.
It's Futurama, yeah. Fry. Take my money from Fry.
That's me right there.
That would be you. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's a great idea. We talked about it at the time when that news came out. I think it's a good idea. It's interesting. You know, fans like yourself would be into it. My dad just doesn't really give a rat's ass about baseball. It feels like it would be a giant pain in the ass to have to make that trek out there to go to Iowa to watch that game. So I'm going to try to get those tickets and then put them on eBay or sell them on the secondary market to someone like you, Matt. And then you can suck on that. Pay me $600 a pop for them.
Capitalist. I like it.
That's right. Got to get that
money. America.
We have one segment to go again. That movie, Screwball, Netflix. If you're bored at any point this weekend, watch it. Thank me later. You'll like it, even if you're not even like the biggest baseball fan. It's just a story. And like ultimately what brought down the Biogenesis scandal, here's the gist of it. The Biogenesis scandal came down to like one guy getting screwed over for like $7,000 is really what that made. And pettiness is what had that whole story end up breaking. So watch that movie. I think you'll really enjoy it. It's Screwball on Netflix. Back after this, one segment to go here on what has been, quite honestly, Root Canal Radio for yours truly. Jim Murray and Matt McCarthy in on the Baseball Reporters tonight here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911, and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Mazzarotti. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
One segment to go here in the Baseball Reporters. Jim Murray and Matt McCarthy in for Maz tonight here on 98.5 of Sports. Time for the big matchup of the game as the Red Sox start up this three-game series with the Angels over the weekend. Nathan Eovaldi on the mound tonight going up against Jose Suarez, lefty for the Angels. Suarez has never faced the Red Sox before. By the way, the big matchup of the game presented by Big Y World Class Market. Big Y serving the Massachusetts community for over 80 years. I guess this is more about if you play, you know, daily fantasy. Look for Mike Trout tonight. Well, shocker, Mike Trout to have a big night. Arguably the best baseball player for the last like 50 years. But Mike Trout 6-for-14 in his career against Nathan Eovaldi. So don't be shocked if Trout has himself quite the night against Nathan Eovaldi this evening. At 42 years old, I'm of the age, Matt, where I have lived through the great baseball card boom of the mid to late 80s. And if you are like me in this around this age, and you remember the rush of opening up a pack of cards, the crack of the delicious gum from a pack of Tops, or going to a card show, I have another movie for you. I was recommending that Screwball documentary in the prior segment. Billy Lanny, who was producing the show, came in during the commercial break and reminded me of another that we mutually watched recently about this very thing, the baseball card boom of the 80s and 90s, Jack of All Trades. It's not the best movie. It ultimately becomes more about this kid and, like, I don't know, his cheating dad, and it's more of like, I don't know, him wanting to make the dad proud. I was like, just talk about the cards and the rush and how sleazy, ultimately, as I've learned later, and I read a book about this, that sleazy the card industry was at that time. And I've also, as I've gotten older, I've also been a little bit more convinced that all those guys, those creepy guys that opened up card stores during that boom in the 80s and the 90s, probably a lot of them were pedos just trying to get close to kids. But Billy, like, you watch this thing too. The one thing you really learn, talking about the shadiness of the card industry.
Yes, sir.
The Ken Griffey card, when the 89 Upper Deck set came out, everyone lusted for the Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, right? Mm-hmm. His handsome face is there. It was the number one card in the set. Like, it turned the industry upside down. If you're around this age, and Billy, you're in your 30s, right?
I am.
Like, you remember it. Like,
yep.
You would stab your mother for the Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card.
I would have.
Like, we all would have. But a lot of that had to do with how scarce it was, the rarity of it. You would spend, you know, those packs of cards, I think, used to go for like close to $5 a pack, which was insane in 1989 prices. You buy these things, you know, do all these kind of chores for your parents. Like, oh, you got to get that Griffey, you got to get that Griffey. It was so scarce. Turns out, no, they were printing it time and time and time again. It was like printing $100 bills.
Sorry. Yeah, they said that. You know, they were trying to convince us that, like, oh, no, it's just by chance. It's different players, different teams. It just comes out as the sheet. But
it was
scam. It was clear as day that they were just printing these things out.
Yeah, and it reminded me, too, like, this is no joke. I got one of the great life lessons from baseball cards, specifically Billy, do you remember the 1988 Fleer Billy Ripken F-face card?
I do.
So Billy Ripken, the bum brother of Cal Ripken, had this card. If you're not old enough to remember, on the knob of the bat, it said expletive face, F face on this thing. And then there were all these other different permutations of error cards that they totally were making up to try to make the thing more scarce and hype up the value of this thing. That big Shriners card show that I still think that they do to this day, that they have a bunch of athletes show up, you pay for their autographs. My dad spent like $20 on a pack of Fleer cards. He's like, I'm only buying you like one pack of these. And I was like, I got to get this Billy Ripken card. I'm like lusting for it like I would a year later for the Ken Griffey card. My dad bought me that pack. I got the thing.
Nice.
I got it. I was 12, whatever I was, 11, 12 years old. I've never felt, in that one moment of my life, I know what it feels like to be the hottest girl in the world. I swear on my mom's grave, I was surrounded by no less than like 20, 30 guys. Like, I'll give you 100. I'll give you 200. I'll give you 300. It was like being on the floor at the New York Stock Exchange. And I had never felt more powerful and awesome. And I was holding this thing and I was like, I had it. And I'm going to sell it. Because I had one guy go up to, I swear, $500. Do you know what $500 is to a 12-year-old boy?
Oh, it's
$8 million.
So yeah. Many more cards you could have got.
Right. So, thank you, Billy. Like, that's all I was like. That might as well have been When Scrooge McDuck goes into all the coins, like $500 to a 12-year-old boy. Are you kidding me?
Do you know how many Super Nintendos I can buy for that?
And I looked at my dad with the face of, I'm going to sell it. And my dad looked at me like, I will break your arms if you sell that car.
You were a chubby kid, too, so $500 worth of candy, too, right?
Billy, oh, Billy, Elio's pizza, Ring Pops, chips, all the Doritos. Like, it would have been the best summer of my life.
Just binging.
And my dad looked at me like, I will kill you. That's going to be part of your college fund. So I hung on to it. That card is now worth, I believe, $2. $2 without it being graded, which is in of itself another scam, which I just recently read about. There was like a big New York Times article about how that's a scam now. Scam, scam, scam. Baseball card industry, it's amazing that people even still buy those damn things. Terrible investment unless you have the Honest Wagner T206. Life lesson there. Sell. Always sell high. Sell high. Oh my God, I still like remain mad at my dad about that 30 years later because I knew deep down, no, I was the one that knew the baseball cards. Yes, they were spending money on their chubby child and bringing me to these card shows, but I knew deep down, like, it's never going to get better than this. Sell to this dumb sucker for $500. Get that money. Always sell high. Instead, I just feared my dad, and I didn't want to get taken into the woods and have my legs broken, and I hung on to the thing, and it was worth crap. Always sell high.
The special basically told you that these cards are printed on toilet paper tubes.
And life lesson, Billy, and you were starting to say you got the same thing from your dad, too.
My dad.
This stuff's worth crap.
We had, I think, two of them. And if I dig hard enough, I think I do have the Billy Ripken card of my parents. But my father's card that he was hell-bent on me preserving and keeping clean was Topps, I can't remember the year, Future Stars card, Greg Jeffries.
Oh, that would have been 86, I believe.
I forget what year it was, but he was so hell-bent on, like, don't screw this card up.
Yeah, Greg Jeffries. Who was the other bum? Wally Joyner. Oh, these Wally Joyner cards are going to be worth so much. And Jose Canseco with the little porn mustache, the wispy Donruss 86 porn mustache.
Canseco is in Jack of All Trades special because the guy's a Canseco honk.
Yeah, so that's another one worth seeing. Two recommendations for you again, Screwball and Jack of All Trades. The Jack of All Trades, not that great, but if you were a baseball card dork, I'm telling you, watch that movie, too. You'll get mad because you'll realize what a scam the whole thing was. $500 if I got that at age 12, Joe Murray. You know what I would have... Oh, my God. I would have felt like the richest kid in America.
Yeah, I had the Todd Zeal, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
The rookie card. That was the good one. Jim, congratulations on getting married.
Oh, thank you, Joe.
We can welcome your wife to the Murray family, even though we're not related. But the Murray family is just... It's a great thing to be a part of. So first off, Felger shut down the computer.
The complete shutdown?
Like, how do you even turn this thing on?
Silver, go in control room B. You're going to see to your right as you enter the room. You'll see all the computers. You'll be able to turn. Turn to your right, Sean. You're good.
Next thing, Screwball, I watched it. Everybody went down. Everybody went down, but Rob Manfred, he got a promotion. What a scumbag.
Well, so that was what I found real funny about it, is like baseball and Rob Manfred come off so bad in this thing. And even when that was being reported at the time, the Biogenesis scandal, like it was more like A-Rod. A-Rod's the bad guy. A-Rod. No, baseball and Rob Manfred were just as bad.
They were using gangsters.
Yeah.
To get information. They robbed some guy's car while he was inside a tanning booth.
Yeah.
Anyways, and what else? I don't know. I'm here till midnight tonight.
Yeah, and I would implore people to listen to you. This is when I feel like you're at your best, Joe. Because
there's
like,
nothing better than the Joe Murray Friday Night of Labor Day. I've done this shift with Joe probably 3 or 4 times. It's the best show of the year.
When you just snap and you realize, like, I can't talk about this crap and no one cares about Red Sox Angels this weekend. Like, I'm going to talk about whatever. That's when you usually get the best stuff.
That's true. I had Army first half. A lot of betting going on tonight,
nice.
By the way.
Yeah.
We got Army. We got Wisconsin. A lot of stuff on the table tonight. Sean Silver's here as well. He got me a great gift.
Nice.
So we got the Joe Show tonight. If you don't know wrestling, he gave me a Samoa Joe shirt. So here until midnight, and I don't know what the hell. All right, we'll start, though. Wide receivers, I heard you guys talking about on the way in. Nope, not impressed. Demaryius Thomas, the guy's been in the league how many years? He can't take a handoff? Did you see that thing last night with his fingers? I'm out. I actually don't like this receiving core at all.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911, and we'll send the link straight to your phone.